Welcome to the Interior Design Podcast. I'm Hayley Roy, a commercial interior designer with a passion for creating beautiful functional spaces.
And I'm Cheryl Sutton, an interior designer and architectural designer. Hayley and I have worked together on various projects over the years and have plenty of insights to share with you guys.
On many episodes, Cheryl and I team up to bring you engaging and lively discussions. Our differing views often lead to interesting debates, giving you two sides of many topics we cover. While Cheryl won't be on every episode, when she does join, it's always insightful.
Thanks. We started this podcast because we feel strongly about interior design and the importance of educating designers. A lot of what you'll hear from us, you won't learn in a course. As designers, there's so much we need to know in order to do our jobs well. And we want to give you a forum where you can access the information you need.
Whether you are an aspiring designer, someone designing your own home, or a seasoned professional working in a residential or commercial design, this podcast is here to help you improve and thrive. We're not about ego-stroking interviews with big names. Instead, we focus on practical advice that you can apply directly to your work.
You'll learn about different products, their applications, and sustainability practices. Our goal is to equip you with the knowledge you need to excel in your projects. And remember, if it's not fun, we're not doing it. So expect a bit of humour and a few expletives along the way.
Maybe a few innuendos. Now, a quick note on production. We are interior designers, not sound producers. I'm handling the editing myself, so please be patient with any technical glitches. I'm improving my production skills as the podcast progresses, and I appreciate your understanding.
However, if there are any editors, sound editors out there that would like to volunteer their skills in return for a mention, please feel free to reach out.
Thanks for tuning in to the Interior Design Podcast. Let's dive in and start this journey of learning and fun together. Hello, listeners. We've got people all over the world listening to this now.
Have we?
It's amazing. Like Australia, America.
That's pretty cool.
Fiji.
That's pretty cool.
I know, right? Maybe how many countries?
Maybe we need to go over there and do a podcast.
Yeah, I think Fiji. I think Fiji needs to pay us to go over there and do it. Welcome to the Interior Design Podcast.
Hi.
Where we are in our new studio. Mm-hmm.
And we've got video, we've got a little lounge set up. It's amazing.
This is my warehouse. Would you know it?
I love it.
Cheryl was here sweating yesterday. I've set up all the microphones and...
I moved the furniture.
Cheryl created this.
I brought the muscles and you bring the brains.
I'm the brains and you're the brawn? No, I don't know about that.
I'm not sure about that after we tried to lift this carpet yesterday and Hannah had to help us. And I'm like, I can't lift it. So weak.
But yeah, I think we've done really well.
It looks amazing. It looks amazing. And I really love the fact, Hayley, that we're in the warehouse. I've just got a really nice vibe about it. It's a bit funky, isn't it?
It's a bit of a mess over that side.
Yeah, don't look over there. Looks great here. So,
what are we talking about today?
We are talking about the process of interior design from concept through to completion.
So, Cheryl, do you want to start us off?
It sounds really straightforward, doesn't it? Like, you know, from an outsider's perspective, you'd think that the design process would be a straight line. Then you do concept, you get your brief, you do concept boards, and you take it through a process. But as with anything and everything, it's never as straightforward as that, is it? It's always, you know, it kind of goes off in different directions and it's maybe one step forward and a couple of steps back along the way. But I say, so from my point of view, it depends, doesn't it, upon the client. If the client has got a really clear vision of what they're trying to create in a space, you, as designers, we take direction from that. But then I think some of the challenging schemes that we work on are the ones where there's almost no real brief and no real kind of direction and
it's okay if they don't have an opinion and then you just crack on with it and do it.
Yeah.
But the trouble is when they don't give you direction and then they don't like what you've done
yeah,
you kind of don't know where to go. Yeah. You don't get any feedback. Feedback is so important, isn't it?
So no, always for me, initially starting off with getting a really good understanding from the client of what they are looking to achieve in terms of the feel of the space. Obviously, we've spoken about, we've touched on before, I think, on a podcast about the importance of the connection of design in relation to brand. If you're, obviously, if we're looking at kind of commercial businesses. But my first point of call will always be just getting as much information from the client as possible and then starting to pull together a visual representation of where I think the design should head. And then and signposting, so they're constantly giving feedback at every stage throughout the process. So
do you know what, I always find that when you talk to the client a lot right at the beginning, you don't have to redo stuff, because you're just on the same page as them.
Because you're, and also you're actively listening. I think, you know, there's probably situations where you can ask loads of questions, but if you're not listening properly, you're not going to get it right, are you?
I always say that the most important thing about being a designer is the ability to listen. Mm. That's like my mantra. Mm. Because I love tapping into other people. Mm. And I think the difference between designers is huge, and some designers have got their own style. Mm. And you go to that designer because they have that certain style. Yeah. But most people don't want that. They want you to realize their dream. Mm. They want to come to you and go, this is what I want. Mm. Make it happen. Mm. And you know, and I get so much pleasure out of that, because I'm really good at being able to communicate and tap into the client.
It's almost like you take, it's almost like, yeah, there's a feeling, isn't there? I, like, how am I going to explain this? For me, there's this feeling.
There's something in you.
Yeah.
Sorry.
It's always been in me.
Something in me. Do you remember that on the About Us one?
Yes, I do. Thank you for pulling that.
Sorry, if you want to hear about what we're talking about, listen to the About Us podcast.
It's just always been in me. Anyway.
Sorry, I completely distracted you then.
Yeah, because now I've got to try and remember what it was. I think for me, there's this feeling that I get when a client comes up with an idea or a vision, and it's just like a little seed, and then you take that and you develop it and you grow it. And that's where the real kind of satisfaction comes in, because then you deliver that back to the client with this, you know, they would have been happy with you just taking their idea and implementing that, mm-hmm. but you've not done it. You've thought,
You make it better.
Mm. Yeah. And I think that's, I love that. Mm. I think that's just really cool.
Yeah. But no, I really like working with people rather than, you know, I sort of always say to people, like, I work for you. Like, what do you want? Mm. And what can we do? Mm. And what I'm going to do is grow it and give you tons of ideas.
Yeah.
And then I'll feed these out into you, maybe with some options. Maybe do some, like, so the first thing I would do is have that meeting with a client, ask them millions of questions. Mm-hmm. Not literally,
but yeah, lots and lots of questions.
A lot of questions.
Yeah.
Things like, I mean, I was in a meeting the other day, doing the initial consultation, and I was asking the client, you know, about their brand, and the guy who owned the business and was there, and the guy who, I'm working on a garden centre restaurant, like a 250-seater restaurant. And there was an owner and then there was a manager, and the manager was so lovely. He was so in mm-hmm. with the business, you know, and mm-hmm. I love working with people like that, because, you know, and the business was really successful with a very dated interior.
Yeah.
So you always know that whatever you do to that restaurant is going to make that more successful.
Yeah.
But my point was, in concept stage, I was like, so what's your values? So, you know, in a business, you have a vision and a mission normally, don't you? What's your vision? What's your mission? What are your values?
Yeah.
You know, and they're good things to ask a business or a personal client.
Yeah.
You know, what's your mission? You know, what's your vision and mission, but maybe what's your values? You know, are you a family person or are you a...
Yeah.
So yeah, I was asking this guy, what are your values? And he kind of rolled his eyes.
Oh, did he?
And he was like, oh God, no. Here we go. This is the fluffy bit.
Oh no.
And he was really not. I mean, he knows he's got to do it.
The thing is, some people are receptive to that kind of stuff and others are not.
And you've got to shut up if they're not, because they just 100%. Don't want to hear it.
Yeah.
So like I...
Yeah, because you like just keep banging on about it.
Some people
No, but
love
I want
it.
To understand what your ethics and values are.
Yeah.
But no, please,
just,
what are
just
they?
Stop talking at that point and listen to the rolling of the eyes, you know?
Like, yeah,
just,
yeah, yeah.
Just get the hint. But so some of my questions are obviously vision, mission, values. The next one is, if your brand were a person, who would it be? And I nearly asked the question
God.
Just to see his reaction.
I mean, I'm not going to lie, Hayley, that one makes me feel a little bit... I'm not comfortable
with
that
one. Oh, my
God,
though. You know, the Noodle Bar in Colchester, though,
yeah.
They told me, Sue, who's the gay lady on telly, Sue something? She's
Sue
very,
Perkins.
Sue Perkins.
Yeah.
That was their
She's
person,
funny.
Right? And even
Well,
after,
as a business?
Yeah.
It was they were Sue
very,
Perkins?
Yeah. Is it Sue Perkins, the one who
Dark
used
hair.
To, yeah, yeah, short hair.
Yeah.
Always wears suits.
Yeah, dated, what's her name? Other woman that does, Claudia Winkleman?
Oh, doesn't she?
Didn't she used to date?
Claudia
Winkleman used. Oh God, I might have got that totally wrong. I don't keep up to date.
Sorry,
with
Claudia.
Any, I don't keep
Neither
up
do
with
I.
Any
am
kind
I?
Of current affairs, and, you know. That's interesting, but I also don't like that question. Don't ever ask me that question.
I think I asked you that question when you were branding Rebel.
What, as a who would I be if I was a person?
I think it's in my branding workshop.
No, it's not. Oh, do you remember when we did that branding workshop? And then after about 3.5 hours, we were sat in the studio, in the old studio. Do you remember it?
Yeah.
In the evening.
Yeah.
We'd have pizza.
It was amazing.
We were drinking gin. I remember literally sitting in the studio for 3 and a bit hours, like getting a little bit drunk with you, eating pizza, and then... As it was literally a light bulb moment. Do you remember?
Mm-hmm.
And we both went...
Never forget that.
And I was like, oh my God, that's it. That is it. This is the name. This is the brand. And you were like, oh my fucking God, yes. 100% you. I was like, mm-hmm, that's what we're doing.
But that's the joy of the branding workshop. So this is another thing that I would do as a process. If someone didn't know what their brand was or who their brand was. So you quite often go into a really successful business and... They've got a logo. They don't know what the personality is.
Yeah.
They want to change the logo.
Yeah.
They
or what it represents.
They want,
or
you know,
it's
they
just a
they
name,
want someone
isn't it?
To just redesign it for them. But it's not. It's for me. It's so much more than just a logo.
Yeah.
Like you want to know the personality of that business.
Yeah.
You want to know who it is.
Yeah.
And this is where that question comes from. But when I gave that question to the Noodle Bar, they were all over it. They loved it. So. You've got to really tap into your audience, and if you have a list of questions like that, like if your brand was a person, who would it be? Cheryl fucking hates that, but I love it. I'm all
shut
over
you
it.
Down.
Who,
in
who,
an
who
instant.
Would I be? Who would I be? You would be a rebel. You would be you. Harp Design. Who would I be?
Oh, I don't
Not
know.
Very
enough.
Good at celebrities.
No, I was going to say exactly the same thing. Maybe it needs to be like, what would your spirit animal be if you were like...
I'm a monkey.
Are you?
I'm definitely a monkey. I was born in the year of the monkey, but I've always like, I love monkeys. I love monkey wallpaper. I love monkey. I loved it. We loved it when we did Swire and we did put the monkeys
the,
in, monkey
the
lights.
Light fittings.
Oh my God.
Yeah, they were cool.
But there's some really cool ones, isn't there? But yeah, going back to concept.
Yeah.
So if someone's got a brand, they sometimes have brand guideline documents. Mm-hmm. Always ask for those mm-hmm. at the beginning. But yeah, it's just asking loads of questions and just being really, really in tune with your client. Having that rapport with your client is so important,
yeah.
Especially in residential.
Yeah.
Like they've got to like you and you've got to listen. Because if you don't listen, you're done, aren't you?
Something that I actually have really tapped into with in terms of questioning at that concept, like initial discussion stage, has come about off of the conversation that we had, or the podcast, sorry, that we had with Karen.
Mm.
And, you know, we were talking about, obviously, psychology of colour. If you haven't heard that podcast, honestly, I can't recommend it enough. I think it was the first one that we released,
it was
wasn't it?
The first one that we did, yeah.
I learned so much from that podcast, from chatting to her. And so now that's something that I try and... take into my, yeah, my job when I'm talking to people about what they're, you know, trying to understand what they want from a space, how they want it to feel, what that feels like, what that looks like, how that feeling looks like to them. Mm. It's really cool, isn't it?
I love it. I love that first bit where you're getting to know people, and well, I love all of it, but...
Oh, the first bit's definitely the best.
And I think people don't necessarily... like you said earlier, like the people don't understand how much goes into what we do.
Mm.
And when you start asking questions, they realise how deep you go, you know?
Yeah.
Sorry. Ding.
Do you go really deep? Amy. Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah. You have to. So we've talked about initial discussions with the client are super important, mm-hmm. and gaining as much information and understanding about their brand or their personality if they're an individual, and, you know, maybe taking on some of the elements that we touched on with Karen about understanding what feelings look like to them.
Mm.
Obviously branding we've briefly touched on, I think, and then the next stage for me is about pulling together that visual representation of, okay, well, from that, all of that information that you've just kindly provided, this is what I think would work and this is what I think would look really cool. Something actually off on a bit of a tangent, I really, really, really want to do a podcast about, in fact, I think this is what we've got Pippa coming in for, right? In September. Hayley and I have, or I've been literally saying to Hayley for ages, I really want to do a podcast with an architect, mm-hmm. like a, you know, fully qualified architect, that where we can talk about how important it is, or if they don't think it's important, about how the connection between interior design and architecture with, in terms of buildings, not just new buildings, but with maybe historic buildings mm-hmm. that are listed. Because that's definitely something that runs through my design. I'm so conscious and so aware because of the training that I've had and the degree that I've got under my belt. Like,
what's your degree?
Tell
our listeners what your degree is.
Well, I mean, you know, I studied for 6 years at uni and got my degree in architecture. I only got my first part, but...
Part one.
But that was enough for me. But it was good to get an understanding. But, you know, that's something that I am really passionate actually about. I'm actually really passionate about that. And I think that's something that I bring to the table, is not just doing something that is completely against what building I'm working in.
You have to be in tune with the building.
Yeah.
If you go against it.
But there is a time and a place, Hayley, where you can do it. But yeah, that's something that I'm really interested in talking to Pippa about when she comes in.
Oh, I can't wait. Pippa is amazing. She's an architect. She works for her dad's partnership, NJ Architects in Ipswich.
Yeah.
She's amazing.
Yeah, she's cool.
She's amazing. So yeah, we're excited to get her on.
So yeah, that's coming up. Mm-hmm. So yeah, concept, images, visual representation of you know, what your thoughts, or even sketches. You know, I kind of love sketching stuff out to show people, oh, I'm thinking of this, or we could do this. And again, it's always like a work in progress and it gets developed and changed along the way. But
I think don't be afraid of sketching something out and it looking rubbish either, even if it's just a box. Just anything to communicate.
Yeah, what's in your head.
What's in your head, yeah. Or what you think is in their head. And that communication is so important in interior design. I think you've got to constantly be reassuring the client that you know what you're talking about, yeah. and explaining why you're doing stuff as well and things like that. So that, especially that early stage, concept and general arrangement, I always do together.
Yeah.
So, you know, Pinterest board potentially. Yeah. I don't really do that anymore unless I'm kind of messing about on my sofa on a Saturday night and I just want to get some ideas down,
mm-hmm.
but generally I'll put something straight into a design pack.
Mm.
and yeah, general arrangement as well. And then you, once you've got the concepts in the general arrangement, you've got like the general gist of where you're going.
Yeah.
You speak to the client about
it. I was going to say, that's the point, isn't it? That's the opportunity for you to get that first critical point of feedback from the client. To make sure that you are in, you know, heading in the right direction. Because we do, this is the other thing, you can ask as many questions as you want and think that you understand and you know where you need to go with something. And sometimes you get it wrong. And sometimes you present you present something for feedback and you get a big fat no. And you're like, I hate that.
I don't get that very often anymore.
There's nothing wrong with that, though.
But no, it isn't. That's why you check in.
Because it's a process. And sometimes the process is by elimination, isn't it? Rather than someone just going, yeah, yeah, I love it all. And actually, do you know what? I like the clients that say, oh, no, I don't think much of that. Because I'm then like a dog with a bone.
Oh, me too. Obviously. Yeah, give me some negative feedback. Wah.
Yeah, because then I'm like, right, let me explain. Because I can justify. I think as designers, you have to be able to justify every single decision that you're making.
100%.
And if you can't justify it,
you shouldn't be using it.
Shouldn't be using it because you've not given it any thought. You've literally just stuck it in.
Mm.
Oh, that'll work. Rather than, oh, hang on, will it? Like, does it work with that? Does it, you know?
But why does it work? You're like, it has to have a meaning behind it.
Yeah, definitely.
And then it's, and then everything that you've got is has got more depth.
Yeah.
Like, and it's got more. And also communicating that back to your client. Mm. You might have got that thought process and all the meaning.
Yeah.
If you haven't communicated that back to the client, they won't enjoy the interior so much.
So yeah, getting feedback at that stage, really positive, hopefully positive feedback. If not, you know, maybe a bit of negative, stuff needs changing, but it makes the process a lot easier, I think, in the long run, doesn't it? Especially in terms of like a general arrangement or a floor plan of the space that you're working on.
When I get feedback, I always say, tell me what you hate.
Mm-hmm.
If you even just don't like it that much, or even don't
just
love
unsure
it.
Unsure about it, maybe.
Like, I don't want to put it in if you don't love it. And I'll go through it and I'll explain why I've done everything.
Mm-hmm.
But if you don't like it, let's change it.
Yeah.
One of the things that I say to my clients is, I don't want you to look back in 2 years' time and really swear about a decision that we're making now. Because if you don't love it, you might be doing that. So make sure that you tell me, you communicate back to me, and I sort of really encourage that.
That's a difficult one though, isn't it? Because it could be that you know, love something and you're completely on board with it and in the moment, but then in 2 years, 3 years, four, five, whatever, as naturally the business evolves or your tastes evolve and change, it's natural that potentially in a few years you might be like, actually, I wish we'd have done that a bit differently.
Yeah. But you can change it, can't you?
Yeah. Yeah. So after, I think the key really is, once you've kind of got to that point where you've got some feedback, good and potentially areas that you can work on and develop, that's the kind of next stage really, is develop design, isn't it? Develop design is never, again, just a, you know, one step in the process and it's like, oh, brilliant, love it all, sign it off, next stage. It, you know, that in itself brings the real depth of feedback and potential changes. Hopefully though, if you've got the kind of concept side of things pretty much where it needs to be, you shouldn't have to change too much. But
I think it depends on the client and how much they can visualize what you're saying, because I think some people just can't visualize anything. Even if you've got something on a plan, until you get it to a 3D visual, they're just like, I've no idea what it's going to look like.
Yeah,
you know. And some people are really visual and they can picture it all in their head, and they're the easier people to work with because they can picture it as you're doing it.
Yeah, it's a bit more of a challenge, isn't it, when you have to try and...
Yeah, and if you use pictures a lot, like in your concept board, this is the floor, this is the lighting, this is what I'm thinking about, this is... And also I try and use actual things, so I'll try and use a picture where there is something in that picture that I can use.
Yeah.
I can specify that. Yeah. I know that I can get that light, for example.
Yeah.
So then the next stage isn't so difficult.
Mm.
So when you're just sort of searching Google, and I think that comes with experience, you know, of who to use and the suppliers, because you know where to get things.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're just searching on Google, you're just kind of putting together an artistic impression kind of thing, or something, you know, that's a picture, but actually that light isn't available off the shelf, we have to have that made bespoke, then it's just not going to happen if you've got a budget.
Yeah.
especially for a commercial property.
And I think that then comes to, you know, when we get to the point where you're kind of costing projects and we talk about the value engineering side of these schemes, because ultimately it is just the way that it goes. You know, things change, people's budgets change. Mm. They can change throughout the project. Yep. It isn't just about, you know, having a figure at the start of the project and that's what we're working to. People's circumstances and business circumstances change, don't they?
Yeah, I had one recently where it was there was a flood and the client thought the insurance company was going to pay for everything.
I remember you saying.
And we got about a quarter of the way through the project, sort of going, yeah, you know, don't go mad, but, you know, specify what you think is right. Mm-hmm. And we were putting Karndean floor in and herringbone and nice lights and things like that. And we got past about a third the way through the project and literally they were like, oh no, the insurance company are not paying for this. And they've excluded certain things that we put in and they put budgets to flooring and things like that, which we didn't know, you know. And the rest of the project we had to really, really skimp on. And it was such a shame because like the first part of the project just looked gorgeous. Mm. And then the second part of the project I kind of, where I'd specified a bar with a whole load of brickwork on it, it got value engineered down to formica. And then.
But do you know what? I think actually that's a really important point that you've just raised, because without, you know, it's not about like selling designers and what they bring to the table, because hopefully most people would appreciate what we do as a job. But I think it's so important in those situations where you are having to value engineer something. You know, if you were a client working on a project, just delivering a project on your own, actually having the expertise of a designer that can say to you, right, well, we need to cut some costs here. You know, and we're not generally, especially in commercial, it generally isn't small amounts. You know, the economies of scale, because it's a business, mean that it generally is a slightly larger sum of money in terms of budget that you're cutting. You know, I think I mentioned to you a project that I was working on this year and last year, the budget got cut almost in half. And it was a, you know, we're talking like £1 million project, like, you know, £7 million project refit. All of a sudden we had to try and make it a £3.5 million project. I'm like, okay. You know, and I think as a designer, having the expertise of a designer that can show you or advise you on the areas that you can reduce spend on without it negatively impacting the whole design, I think that in itself is worth, we're worth our weight in gold for that.
Mm, I agree.
Because there's a lot of people that be like, oh no, we'll just do that. We'll just take that out. Like, absolutely not. That is not the area that we're cutting back on, because that's the key. That's a key feature in the space, or that's a, you know, there's other ways of making those savings and it's not there. Do you know what I mean?
How do you feel when you're, because I quite often get in a, you're the same as me. You have meetings with, you're in a meeting with an architect and structural engineer, you know, the contractors, and you're generally the only girl,
mm-hmm.
aren't you?
Yeah. There's been a lot of situations where I am completely outnumbered, but then at the same time that there's a lot more women in construction now, isn't there? And actually, sorry, well, you were going to ask me a question. Can't stop talking. It's that second coffee. That's what it is. No breakfast and two coffees. What were you going to ask me?
I was going to ask you, quite often you get, and I love watching you in a meeting because you can hold your own with a whole lot of big, hairy men. But you often, I just wanted to talk about it really, because you often get, some people I think would get quite intimidated on that, in that situation, and you know, you and I in a meeting would both hold our own, but I can imagine some designers find that really difficult, because you've got to be really strong. You've got to be like, I mean, I was having a fight with someone about some flooring and they were like, well, the client wants to carry a whole lot of barrels across this entrance matting. You know, it's going to be 100 kilos at a time.
Mm.
Okay, well, there's only one kind of flooring that you can do, and that's with the metal strips in it.
Mm-hmm.
And the client was like, I don't want to pay for it. So I was, my integrity, I couldn't actually specify what he wanted to specify and what the contractor wanted to specify because of the money.
Yeah.
I couldn't put that in my design pack because it was not fit for purpose.
Yeah.
It's just not. Yeah. So I was having this conversation with the client, and you know,
and they can get quite heated, can't they? Mm. Because obviously, you know, ultimately he's paying you for your service and your expertise, but at the same time, the buck stops with the client.
I don't think that ever got heated. It just got, well, you can do that, but it's not going in my design pack.
Mm.
Or if it does go in the design pack, it's going with a massive disclaimer saying, I don't recommend this. Yeah. This is a client's choice.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think you've got to keep your integrity, but you've got to be able to be flexible. You know, if a client doesn't want to spend the money, it's going to get destroyed in a few years. He's going to have to replace it. He's not going to come knocking on my door and say, you shouldn't have specified that.
Yeah.
You know, so.
Yeah, you do really have to cover your arse, don't you? I think, to a degree.
Yeah. I don't think it's sort of arse covering. I think it's more kind of integrity, isn't it? It's more like, you've asked me to do this. Like you say, you've employed me as an interior designer. I'm giving you advice.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't want to listen to that advice, that's absolutely fine.
Mm.
You carry on.
Yeah.
You know, and you reap the consequences, but don't expect me to jump on board with that.
Yeah.
Because I don't agree. And we can happily disagree.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm more than happy to disagree.
Yeah. I'm not going to get
shitty about it.
That's the key, isn't it? It's about actually being able to say, we can, we don't have to agree on everything. And there's nothing wrong with that.
Mm. We were going to talk about, can you design to a budget, weren't we?
When you say, can you design to a budget?
Oh, people ask me this all the time. Can you design to a budget?
Well, that's the job.
Well, if someone has got a budget down to the last penny and you are interior designing their restaurant and their budget is unrealistic, you can't, you know, and... I don't think you can design to a budget. I think if someone says to me, can you design and project manage my restaurant or my house?
Mm-hmm.
I've got 100 grand or I've got 500 grand. 100% I can design to that.
Mm.
But if you want me to just design it and not be involved after the design process as part of the value engineering process and everything else, I can't design to a budget because all of the things that you want, generally people want more than they can afford.
Mm.
So someone might say, I want marble in my bathroom, but the budget is this. The budget isn't marble, but it might, you never know. If you don't spend money on really nice toilets and really nice basins, we can make marble happen.
It's just about
but you've got to balance it.
You've got to manage
playing with the money, isn't it?
Yeah,
you've got all the prices in. It's about playing with the money and making it work to the budget.
And I think managing, you know, I think we've spoken about this numerous times, that actually it's about managing people's expectations throughout the process. You know, actually, like we've said before about the ability as a designer to stand up and actually, you know, like communicate well with clients about things, you know, whether it's good or bad, you know, if there's a problem on a project, or you know, or if a client's saying, well, this is what I want, and as designers are saying, you know, if it's, for example, that they've this beautiful marble that they've had their eye on for years and they want that in the bathroom, but their budget doesn't allow it, and you know that their budget doesn't allow it, you've got to be upfront and honest with them,
but then there might be one thing that person wants, and then everything else goes out the window so we can get that one thing.
Yeah.
So it's just about playing with money. And it's about
definitely
chucking everything in, be really aspirational, and then after you've done that, you bring it down.
Yeah. I think it's just really important that you get a sign-off, and almost like a final sign-off of the development design before you start costing anything. Once developed design has been fully developed, and again you're getting feedback from the client throughout that process, you kind of get to a stage, don't you? You naturally get to a point where you're like, right, okay, this is, the design is pretty much, we're there with it. And maybe 95 or 99% there with it. There might be a few points that need a bit of further development or thought, but you're pretty much, the bulk of it's done. And I think at that point, it's really important for everyone to make everyone's life easy, is to get that final kind of clarification from the client that they're happy with what you've come up with before you then start taking it to the stage of, okay, well, we need to get this costed. And that's always a very nerve-wracking time, I think, because whilst you can get a really good understanding of budget and product cost, especially in the market that we live in now, and the world that we live in now, since, you know, I know we keep talking about COVID, which was so many years ago now, but it, you know, the cost of materials and the cost of labour, oh, just insane. I mean, we've spoken about this before. You know, and I appreciate that, you know, things move on and things change and the rate of inflation and you know, naturally everything gets more expensive, but it all happened off of COVID. It all happened off the back of COVID naturally and Brexit. But it never, everyone was talking. I remember having conversations with people and they were like, oh, well, it'll all come back down. It'll all come back down. And I remember
it never goes down. It will stay the same for a while.
This is the natural progression. This is how the world works. Like, but it, I think it's so almost, not volatile, that's not the right word, but it's like, it changes on a weekly basis. Material costs can change on a weekly basis. So whilst you can put all of that effort in and all that time into thinking that you're working to a budget or to the client's budget because you know the cost of things, if the development design of the design takes 3 months or 6 months or longer because it's a big project, that budget almost becomes kind of potentially out of reach, which is why then we get to the stage of costing. It's always a bit scary and a little bit, you know, is something going to come back and be three times the price that I thought it was because of the nature of what we've just said. And then comes the fun part of trying to, okay, right, let's pick it apart a little bit and look at ways that we can make some savings. Key areas.
I really like doing everything and designing and project managing. Not necessarily project managing, but working all the way through the project. So some clients will only want you to design and then they'll take on the project. But I like being involved all the way through because then you get that control and that ability to be able to value engineer, because you can just chuck everything in and just go, right, this is aspirational. How you know, what can we do to make this work? If the client's got a budget of this, okay, so we want a living green wall, but, you know, we might not get a living green wall, but we might get a fake green wall that's a really good quality one, so it looks great, or a moss wall, or we might get some wallpaper of a forest, you know, you don't know, but you've still got that vibe. You know, you don't have to spend a shit ton of money. I mean, this is a perfect example of where we're sitting. So we've recycled absolutely everything to create this set. But it's not about spending money. It's about being creative, you know? And I think that's one of the things that interior designers can give to people, is that creative edge with things. Where you don't necessarily have to spend a shit ton of money.
It's always nice though when you get a project where, like, I mean, I don't think it's ever happened. I don't know what I'm talking about. I was going to say, it's so nice when you get a project where you've, you know, money's not an issue. No, you know, budget's not even on the radar.
It's what am I always talking about? On the radar.
Exactly. I tell you what is really frustrating for me is that when I talk to a client and they don't want to give that information to me. Because it's a really old school way of looking at stuff, isn't it? Like, if you know what, you know, I wouldn't go into a shop to buy some clothes and say, and you know, and someone says to me, oh, like, you know, what are you looking for? And I tell them what I'm looking for, you know, I'm going out for dinner or whatever, and you know, and this is what I want, and okay, well, how much money are you looking to spend on this dress or whatever? Well, you tell me. Do you know what I mean?
I love that.
Well, you tell me. Like, I just wouldn't. And design and every, I just, yeah, I don't know. It's all a bit cloak and dagger for me. I'm like, just be honest. I'm not going to over design something for you. Or if you've got a really healthy budget to work to, it's not about taking the piss. It's about getting you what you want for the best possible price.
But see, if you look at CDM management,
mm.
budget is one of the things that is important to be communicated
mm.
in under CDM. So if you're doing construction design management yeah. and you're principal designer,
yeah.
in the notes, I've got like a template which I took off when I did my CDM training. In my briefs now, mm. all of my briefs have a CDM template. Mm-hmm. If anyone wants it, just give me an email. But you answer certain questions. And, yeah. and part of that is what is
budget.
The budget. Yeah. yeah. And you have to give that. You can't not yeah. do that.
Yeah.
You can, but then you're stabbing in the dark. I have got a few little tricks, though. When people aren't giving me a budget, I do ask certain questions. And I really like this one. It's if you were talking about a brand that you wanted to spend money, so you're not going to give me a budget, okay, mm-hmm. fine, fair enough. What brand would you say you were looking at to spend? Would you go Primark or mm. would you go Primarni?
Yeah,
I nearly said
yeah,
Primarni.
Yeah. Primarni.
Armani. Or would you go Next? Or would you go BMW?
Yeah,
or would
yeah,
you
yeah.
go, you know, so yeah. tell me a brand of where you want to spend. You know, obviously, if you're going Primark, you're going cheap, IKEA furniture
yeah,
in
fast
your office.
Furniture. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Which we wouldn't recommend because it won't last 5 minutes. But
yeah.
you might have that. If I don't think anyone's ever employed me and said Primark. But they have said BMW and they have said... I don't think anyone's ever said Next. No one's ever said Armani. Well, no, actually, no one's ever said Armani to me, but because... those kind of clients generally don't talk about budget. They just go.
Exactly.
They're just like, this yeah. is what I want.
Yeah. Yeah. No, budget is important. And I think the value engineering side of things, which we obviously the stage that we kind of got to, is that, yeah, it can be challenging, but it can be.
I love it when you get to the figure. And you go, yes.
Yeah.
And you like tweaked it all. And you've yeah. got, when you're project manager, and you tweaked yeah. it all. And you've gone to each contractor and go, right, can you just shave a little bit off? Or how can we cut a bit of this? And you have to do it all the way through. Even
yeah.
if it's like 200 quid somewhere.
Yeah.
If you do that all the way through, you can actually.
There are some real highs in this role, isn't there? You know, from the initial feeling of excitement from a design point of view in terms of concept through to development of design through to the value engineering, which is a different vibe because it's more challenging, but then onto the delivery side of things, that feeling that you get when you've delivered a project for the cost that you've done it for or for the client, and you know that what they've got is like is awesome and mm. really good value, you know, and it's been done really well and the quality's amazing and the value for money is really good, and it's like, oh my god, we've achieved that, we mm. collectively, the whole team, from designers, architects, contractors, suppliers, the client, their business, like everybody, like we've achieved that. That's awesome.
When you do it, like we've just finishing off Southwell Race Course and they've invited me to Ladies' Day.
Oh,
I can't
nice.
Wait. But yeah, though we're just finishing it up now and sort of we're getting the final bits delivered. And it's just so nice. And we've had like, you know, everyone's kind of been trying to pull in the same direction. And I've been designing it while they're doing it, which is really
That's
difficult.
So hard.
And, you know, I'd send through a design and then the client would be like, no, I don't like that. And, you know, it's like, yeah. well, you haven't actually got time to, you haven't got time to change it now. I've had a few conversations like that because
it's so
it's just
tough.
Like, well, you know, but But actually, everyone has really pulled in the same direction on that project. Mm. And it's been really satisfying to see that all come together. The grandstand looks amazing. I worked really hard on the flooring in the grandstand to get it really right. I'd put lots of different patterns in. I did Candine. Put lots of different patterns on the floor.
Cool.
And I love it so much. I'm like, it went in there when it was being laid. I was like, oh my God, it looks amazing. But yeah, that's the high, isn't it? When you get to finish it. And some clients, the one disappointing thing, and I was talking to someone about this the other day, is sometimes people employ you, you do the design and you never see it. Like you don't, don't project manage when you don't see it all the way through.
Yeah.
And I haven't got time to kind of go around the country and do stuff if the client's not going to pay me to do, you know, to help them finish it.
Yeah, of course.
I could sort of ask for photos, I suppose, but I'm just flying by the seat of my pants at the moment. We've got so much going on.
Yeah.
I just haven't got time to sort of chase all the ones that I've done, but it'd be lovely to see if anyone's listening and they've worked with me and and I haven't seen any photos, please send them to me.
Oh, it's good.
I love it.
It's cool. I mean, I'm not really sure that we've given much in the way of... I don't feel like we've been very clear, Hayley, with, like, the process.
We haven't been very structured,
I don't think we should really call it a process, because it isn't. You know, it follows guidelines, doesn't it? But it's... And, you know, also, I guess there's an element of each designer... Every designer will do it slightly differently.
Mm. I think that's the difficult thing about our industry, is that... Every designer is different. There's not like a way of working, a way of pricing. You know, it's, I mean, the RIBA has really helped me with my, I price now on RIBA stages.
Mm-hmm.
And I get asked to price for RIBA stages as well.
Yeah.
So that really helps me price things.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's just about, it is such a vast industry. And also the qualifications. Do you know what? I was listening to the Interior Design Business podcast. On this podcast, it was all about, and I would recommend if anyone's looking to get into interior design that they listen to this, because it was all about apprenticeships. They have now got an interior design apprenticeship, which I am so happy about because I've had loads of interior designers come in and as apprentices, and I've had to put them on a customer service apprenticeship because they don't do an interior design one. And this lady,
to enable them to learn so that at least it's a way in for them. You mean? Yeah.
But I do get very, very frustrated with the education system in interior design, because you can just do a very short course and become an interior designer, or you can go to university for a few years. But people who are coming out of university aren't getting taught things like LRV, CDM.
Yeah, we were talking to Lily, weren't you?
Lily's
upstairs
at uni.
About
she
it.
Doesn't know any of that. And she's, so Lily, who's working for Harp at the moment, she's doing the summer holidays. She's brilliant, but, you know, she doesn't know things that I think they should be teaching her in uni. You know, she's brilliant at software. She's doing really well with
software.
But
do you know what? I think actually a lot of interior designers come from different, they come about through other areas. Do you know what I mean? So my training was never in interior design. You know, my training was, my degree was architecture.
Mm.
So I had an understanding of architecture, which then led me to interior design.
Mm.
And it was a kind of self-learning process but that's not a bad thing, because it gave the skills that I've got and the knowledge that I've got from an architectural point of view gives me a different... is, you know, it's a slightly different perspective than just going to college or uni and doing an interior design course that's very specific. Like, I feel like actually it's not necessarily a bad thing, because it means that the type of designers you get are much broader because their knowledge is different and broader. Do you know what I mean? But at the same time, I'm with you that you know, there is key things that need to be taught.
LRVs, CDM, like,
yeah.
If anyone doesn't know what that means, is light reflectance values, which is really important for critical surfaces if you're designing for public spaces, and CDM, construction design management, which if you're a principal designer, you know, you might be, might be needing that.
Yeah.
But
even if you're not principal designer, it's still so important to be aware of what the responsibilities are as a, you know, in terms of your design and what you are designing and how you're designing and how you're managing that design, or how the design is being managed.
I suppose if you're an interior designer or you're a client, you need to know about CDM if you're doing any construction.
Yeah.
Because you've got...
It's a legal requirement.
It's legal, yeah.
Even a domestic house.
Yeah.
And this is what I find really interesting. Mm. If you... Welfare facilities, under CDM rules, you know, even if you have a plumber come in or a heating engineer come in and service your boiler, you have to... You know, there is a responsibility on you as the client, as the customer, to manage the CDM.
The rule is that you have to have, if you have more than one contractor on site at any one time, you need CDM. Mm. So a lot of domestic projects, the contractor will take on principal designer and principal contractor role because designers, and I've worked with a couple of residential designers who had no idea what CDM was. Mm-hmm. But actually, as a designer, even if you're not taking on that role, you need to say in your terms and conditions you're not taking on that role, because otherwise it might be assumed that you're taking on that role.
Yeah.
And the client needs to make sure that, you know, they know their legal responsibilities, and you have to, well, every project that I quote for, I always send through the responsibilities so the client's aware of it. But CDM is a minefield.
we should do a podcast on that.
Definitely. We need a CDM advisor.
We should speak to Daniel Connell.
I have already. I've got him.
Who? Think Tristan?
No, Jonathan Rensink.
Oh, let's get him in.
Yeah, he's brilliant. He said he'd do it.
That, I think that we should definitely do that. Mm. I think that's huge.
Do that. So next podcast is Pippa.
In September, she's coming in.
I don't know if I'll be editing it by September, but yeah.
Yep. Yeah, forget about what time of the year it is, what month it is. I mean,
I'll try and edit it as soon as it comes. But
Pippa.
Pippa's going to be good.
Who knows where it will go, what we'll be discussing. I mean, I kind of love that about, I quite like having these these episodes where we, where it's
talk
not
about
so
what we do.
Where it's not so structured about the product side of things is great, but it's quite nice just to have a bit of a debate about stuff, isn't it?
Yeah, go deep. Got such a dirty laugh. Sorry. Nah.
Love your laugh. If we haven't confused you, hopefully you have enjoyed listening to us talking about the process. And let's do the
thank you for joining us on the Interior Design Podcast.
If you liked this episode, please like, share and leave us a review.
We're on Facebook and Instagram at interiordesign.podcast and on LinkedIn as Interior Design Podcast.
We really value your feedback. So if you have any ideas on topics that you'd like us to cover or people you would like us to interview, please do get in touch.
Thanks for listening and we'll see you next time.